Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We open up today's shiur 4 lines from the top of Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. You will already see a triangle, and we have accompanying this a mivneh, a structural note that you find in the outside margin. We might as well point out that as we open up today's shiur, we're in a sense, in the middle of a discussion that we started on Daf Kuf Yud Beis Omid Beis. We saw over there that Rava said that when you salt basar shchuta, kosher meat, in basar treifa with unkosher meat, the kosher meat becomes forbidden. What the Gemara does here with regard to the triangles, which we will see shortly when we read our note, represent a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a discussion. The triangles will represent questions. We have triangles numbered 1 and 2 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. These represent 2 questions from sources on Rava's teaching. In the course of the Gemara, though, there will be a back and forth, a give and take in the discussion, and this we will monitor through our triangles repositioning themselves as a question and answer appear. So in our note in the outside margin, we'll read what we've already essentially captured orally. The Mivneh note says, and you see a triangle, and we've written in parentheses Ma'akav, which is an attempt to keep track. Kushos alha di Omar Rova, with the triangle, point facing up, they are questions on Rava that said shebemlichas boser shchuta im boser treifa hashchuta neaseres, that if you were to salt 2 pieces of meat together, one being unkosher, one being kosher, the kosher meat, the meat that was slaughtered properly, will become ruined. Why? Machmas tzir hatreifa, because of not the blood that's exuded, but rather because of the brine that's exuded from the treifa. The triangle, as we go on in the Gemara, you will notice is inverted. That means with the point facing downwards, those represent responses to questions that are raised. Now, turning to the Gemara. 4th line from the top. Meisvei. We ask on Rava from a source. The source, you can see, appears in a frame. Dag tohor shemolchoi im dag tomei. Mutter, and we've dashed underlined the word mutter. This is the key point. We see here fish that's of a kosher variety that's salted together with unkosher fish. The kosher fish remains tohar. My love, are we not to assume here shehoyu shnehem muluchim, that both were salted, and as such, they're both preoccupied, so to speak, with exuding whatever liquids they contain, and hence there's no opportunity for any absorption of the forbidden. The Gemara, if that would be the case, then we would have a kasha on Rava. Here we see mutter, a leniency, which is contrary to Rava's ruling given those same circumstances. The Gemara now rejects this. Lo. Kigon shehoya tohor maliach v'tomei tofel. The reason that there is a heter over here is because only the kosher variety was salted, and the tomei is unsalted. Tofel, it's unsalted. As a result of that, the tomei is not exuding anything, and only the kosher one is exuding whatever liquids it may contain, and hence it remains unaffected. Question. From the fact, however, that the closing part of this source, or the latter, a latter section of the same source says, there it's stated explicitly that the tohor is salted and the unkosher is without salt. So could we not infer Michlal Dereisha, the earlier quote, that means the section that was in a frame right after the triangle as we opened up our Gemara, that particular section, Bishishnehem Meluchim Askinan, that both pieces were salted. In other words, in the Seifa, in the latter part, there you find an example of kosher salted, unkosher tofel. So what must be the ratio talking about, where in fact both were salted, and still we see a heter, we see a leniency, and that's once again reinstating the kasha on Rava, where we have a ruling of leniency as opposed to what Rava said, that the unkosher would ruin the kosher. The Gemara says no. This is not a, we are not to infer that the Reisha was Shnei Meluchim, but rather Perushe Komaforesh. We combine these two above framed sections into one source, and it would read as follows. Tohor Shemolcho Imdag Tomei Mutter. Ketzad, under what circumstances would we say that it's Mutter? Shohayo Tohor Moliach V'Tomei Tofel. So you can see that this latter section is explaining the earlier section, where it's saying that when is there a lenient ruling, a ruling of mutter? Only when the tohor happens to be salted and the tomei is unsalted. And then we would articulate that, however, if both were salted, then you wouldn't have the ruling of leniency, which would be in favor of Rava. Hachi nami mistabra. And this approach is also reasonable, or it's logical. If you were to think that the Reisha was actually ruling leniently where both were salted, and still we're going to rule leniently against Rava, well, hashto shnei meluchim shari. Once you tell me that if both are salted, then and we still have a shari, meaning an allowance, then tohor maliach v'tomei tofel mibaya. Would there be any reason for the source to spell out that which is even more obvious, namely where the tohor is the only one that's salted and the tomei is unsalted? That would be obvious. So from the fact that the source spells out the case of tohor maliach v'tomei tofel, it must be that's the subject of the whole source, and the case where both were salted in fact would lead to a prohibition like Rava. At this point, the Gemara challenges what was said under the heading Hochi Nami Mestabra, and you'll notice we have a triangle that appears in a slightly different than the others, this dash triangle, and we've noted in the margin where the starred comment appears, Tam the dotted triangle, dash triangle, this piece of Gemara that we're about to read is a problem, rak al hodikomar hochi nami mistabra. It's only a challenge to this point of support to Rava, but it's not necessarily a challenge to Rava directly. So the Gemara, and that's why we have this triangle, though we wanted to preserve the give and take flavor of the Gemara, so we use the triangle with the point facing up representing a challenge. But to be accurate, it's a challenge to that which was going to serve as a support for the answer that we gave on behalf of Rava, namely the Perushe Komaforesh answer. So here the Gemara asks, "E mishum ha lo irya." If this is the basis of your proving that the source was Perushe Komaforesh, then it's not absolutely solid. Rather, I can argue to the contrary. Tana seifa legluye resha. The Tana teaches the seifa to shed light on the resha. Namely, the lotema, that you should not say reisha tohor maliach v'tomei tofel avol shnei meluchim aser. That would have been, in fact, like Rava. Rather, don't say that. Therefore, Tana Seifa, therefore the Tana speaks out in an explicit way, tohor maliach v'tomei tofel, where the tohor, the kosher one, is salted and the unkosher is without salt, and then we would be able to infer Michlal de Resha Shnehem Meluchin. So therefore the Resha must have been talking about a different case, namely where both were salted, Ve'afilu Hachishari, and even so they are still both mutter, as the source itself said. And once again, that would not be like Rava. So as far as using the structure of the source as a proof in favor of Rava, that the Gemara backs out from. Toshma mi seifa de seifa. The Gemara now, and we've called this number two, this is a starting with a new kasha on Rava. The seifa de seifa means the closing part of the source that we had started above, all the different framed sections. Now we continue in that same Tanaic source, and it says, Aval im hoya tomei maliach v'tar tofel oser. There is prohibition, but when is there prohibition? If the tomei, the unkosher one, was salted, and the kosher one was unsalted. So it's the kosher is the item that's in the position to absorb, being that it's not salted, it's not exuding anything, and only the tomei one, the unkosher one, is exuding. That creates iser, that creates prohibition. And now we can infer, we're going to infer from this quote, when is there prohibition? Only when all the stacks are loaded against the tohar, namely that it alone is tofel. So the Gemara says, Tomei maliach v'tar tofel hu da aser. Only under these circumstances do you have prohibition. Ha, shneim aluchem shari. But if both would be salted, then you would not have prohibition, and that would be against Rava. Rava wanted to say that if both are salted, then the unkosher ruins the kosher one. The Gemara rejects the question. Aidi detana reisha, since the reisha featured the case of tohar maliach v'tomei tofel, meaning one salted, one unsalted, therefore tana nami seifa tomei maliach v'tohar tofel. Therefore, the seifa also taught a case of only one salted and the other unsalted, and that is the case that we saw aser, but not to say that is the only case of iser. And once again, not to infer from the seifa anything. The seifa structure was taught as a counterbalance to the reisha, but not for the purpose of inferring. And rather, just like in the case of Tomei Maliach V'tar Tofel, will there be prohibition? We will tell you, in defense of Rava, that also in the case of both being salted, you would have Isser, just like Rava taught. As we continue in our Gemara, we notice on the outside margin a Nosei Klali, means a general topic or general introduction, and a Mivneh note combined into one. You'll notice that we have a diamond featured. As you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice three diamonds appearing as the Gemara unfolds. These are Memros Shel Shmuel. They are comments or teachings of Shmuel, Be'inyan Melichas Bosar, that have in common the issue of Melichas Bosar, the salting of meat. And as we've mentioned in the past, the purpose of salting of meat is to extract the blood, which is a forbidden item, to extract the blood from the meat before cooking it up, before being allowed to cook it up. We have in the Gemara itself a parentheses section which reads Simen Bisro Demonach Nafkusa. These are, we'll call it a memory device, by citing, the Gemara here cites three key words which represent the three comments of Shmuel as they appear. So if you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll see that the first comment says, Ein habosor yotze midei domo, elin kemoch yofa yofa, madicho yofa yofa. The word in that phrase that's emphasized in the simen is the word bosor or bisra. The second comment has to do with the placing of the meat being salted in a vessel with cleese in it. So the key word there, it says, Ein manichin. The word in the simen is demonach. And in the third diamond, you have Shmuel mentioning in the name of Rabbi Chiya, halacha concerning the breaking of the neck of the animal before the animal is completely dead, before its life breath has left it. And that's alluded to in the simen by the word nafkuso, which means to exit. In this case, the exiting of life breath of the animal. So the premature breaking of the neck will pose a problem. We will, of course, get to that later in the Gemara. In the meantime, let's turn to the first diamond. Omar Shmuel, Ein habosar yotze midei domoi, elo im kein molcho yofe yofe umadicho yofe yofe. A piece of meat doesn't have its blood leaving it unless it's salted thoroughly and then rinsed off thoroughly. The topic that we are going to be dealing with is under our Nosei heading, Malicha Vahadocha, the need for salting and rinsing. Continuing in the Gemara, Itma Rav Huna Omar Moleach Umediach. Rav Huna says the procedure is salting and then mediach, rinsing. Pemasnisa Tana, in a Tanaic source, it is taught, Madiach Umoleach Umediach. There is a need for rinsing, salting, and then a subsequent rinsing. The Gemara points out that, in fact, this Tanaic source and Rav Huna are not at odds with each other, but rather there are different circumstances or different background behind each point, Rav Huna and the source. V'lo pligi, there is no controversy. Ha dechalalei beit habcha, the aleph that we have here corresponds to Rav Huna's aleph. That is a case where it was already rinsed off at the site of its slaughtering, the butcher shop or the slaughtering shop. Chalalei is rinsing. So that if there is, what we see is that after the slaughtering of the animal and the sectioning it into different cuts of meat, there has to be an initial washing off. So that, in the case of Rav Huna's teaching, had already taken place. Therefore, Rav Huna gets to the second stage, namely the salting, and then a final rinsing off of the salt. The Gemara continues, Ha dolo chalalei beit habcha. The Tanaic source that mentioned that there is an initial rinsing is talking about a case where at the slaughtering site it itself, in fact, was not washed off. So if you get meat that's, let's say, freshly slaughtered, and just minutes after it's been slaughtered and cut up and has not been rinsed off, you will be expected to do that first rinsing. The rinsing, then salting, and then another rinsing. Ravdimi Nahardo Molach Lei B'Milcho Galnisa U'Menapitz Lei. Ravdimi's practice was to salt meat with coarse salt and then to shake it off. Rashi points out that if one uses a finer grade of salt, then there isn't any need to shake it off. It will simply drip off as the salt absorbs the blood. It will then just drip off. Omar Rav Mesharshia. Ein machzikin dam bivnei me'ayim. Rav Mesharshia says that after the slaughtering of an animal, the innards, the bnei me'ayim, and the Gemara will enumerate which ones, but they are not considered as having blood in them. Namely, if you were to take one of the enumerated organs that we haven't learned yet and cook it up without having salted it initially, there would be no problem, because we assume that any blood that might have been in these particular organs exited at the time it was slaughtered. Tirgama, so the Gemara explains that Rav Mesharshia's point is going on, a karkisha, umeayo, vahadro dekanto. These are three organs. We won't translate them at this stage, but simply point out that there are three organs that fall under this category. Omar Shmuel. Now we notice the second diamond. Ein manichin basar maliach el agabi kli menuchav. When salting the meat, there will be blood flowing out of it, the salt drawing the blood out of it. It's important that the salting of the meat takes place on a on a vessel that has holes in it, in a vessel that has holes in it, in other words, enabling drain-off to take place, where you won't have the meat sitting in the blood. Rav Sheshes molach le garma garma. Rav Sheshes would salt piece by piece. In other words, he wouldn't have two pieces salted together. The Gemara asks a question. Trey my time alo, why was Rav Sheshes resistant to salting two pieces together? Mishum de porish mehai uvola hai. It seems that was a fear that one piece would exude the blood and the second piece that's with it would absorb it. Well, if that is a real fear, then chad nami, even if you're talking about salting one piece, which Rav Sheshes does allow, why isn't he consistent with his apprehension and say, porish me hai giso bola hai giso? That you have one piece of meat, the blood will leave one side of it and enter the other side of the one piece. If there is this fear of one exuding and the other absorbing, you could even create a fear like that on with regard to one piece. Ela lo shna. Rather, there is no difference, and this is the Gemara ruling leniently, and it's therefore mutter even to have two pieces being salted together. And as Rashi explains, the basis for this is that while exusion is taking place, assuming of course we're talking about like substances, while exusion is taking place, there is no absorption. We continue in the Gemara with another diamond of Shmuel. Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Chia. Here, Rabbi Shmuel quotes Rabbi Chia and says, "Hashover mafrakta shel behema kodem shetetze nafsha." One who breaks the spine in the back of the neck of an animal before its life breath has departed. Hareze machbid es habosor vegozel es habrios. Umavlia dam ve'evorim. Let's glance at the Rashi. Hareze machbid es habosar. This causes the meat to become weightier. The fish shebishas shitaso hitruda lahoitzi dam. At the point the animal is slaughtered, the animal is preoccupied in casting out its blood. The blood is flowing forth. That happens when it's being slaughtered. But if one at that point breaks its neck, mitoch tsorosa ein bo koach lishaneach lehotzi dam, it loses its ability to grunt, and with that action, it enables more blood to come out. He nochav v'shoketes, and all of a sudden, the animal comes to a total rest. Patam nivle v'voreh, and as a result of that, the blood that would have otherwise come out, as a result of the breaking of the neck, now it will stay in its organs. Umachbid habosar, and cause greater weight to the meat. And he ends up, when selling the meat that's now blood saturated, people aren't interested in eating the blood, so yet he's selling blood saturated meat, thereby causing people to pay for the meat that's sold by weight, pay in effect for as part of the weight, blood, and people aren't interested in that. So that's the association with being gozel sabrios, with stealing from the public. So in the meantime, we see this comment of Rabbi Chia mentioning that by breaking its neck while it still has life breath in it, meaning it's still flapping around, so it's machbed es habosar, gozel sabrios, and mavliya dam vevorim. Now the Gemara wants to analyze this point. How are we to understand this teaching of Shmuel in the name of Rabbi Chia? And the Gemara now gives us two possibilities. They're labeled with the letters Aleph and then Beis. And you see before the Beis a squiggle of expression, Oy Dilma, which is one of the markings we use when you have alternatives presented in the Gemara. In this case, we have two sides or two alternatives in how to understand the teaching of Shmuel. So the Gemara asks, Hechi komar, machbid es abosir gozos abrios, mishum de mavli adam beforem. The premature breaking of the neck causes an extra weight to the meat that, as we said, is sold by weight. And as a result of that, he ends up stealing from the public, meaning it's overcharging the people, charging people for meat that's actually blood-saturated. Now, why is it gozel sabrios? Because of this mavliya dam beforem, causing the blood to be absorbed in the limbs. And as far as Shmuel's objection or Shmuel's concern is, this merely a financial concern involving charging people for the blood-saturated meat. We could infer, though, holiday shabir domi. But as far as the owner himself of the meat, the original, the butcher of the meat itself, holiday for himself, shabir domi, there is no kashrus problem, because what he could do is simply resalt it and get out the dam that stayed in because of the breaking, the premature breaking of the neck. Oy domo, or possibly there, the other possibility is ladidei nami oser. For the shoychet, for the slaughterer himself, the meat will be usher. In other words, not just a financial concern, but as a result of the blood staying in the organs when it could have come out initially, there is no more solution for the meat through salting. Salting won't help anymore. So that the teaching of Shmuel is not one of just financial concern, that by breaking the neck of the animal you're enabling meat to be sold that happens to be blood saturated, but we're talking about meat that can no longer be salted to get the blood out because of what happened, and therefore it has ramifications for the person himself that owns the meat, or the original butcher. So as far as this kish is concerned, the Gemara ends off teku without offering a definitive answer, but it is safe to say that breaking the neck of the animal shortly after it's slaughtered, namely while it's still flapping around before its life breath has departed, is a very undesirable practice vis-a-vis the blood that won't come out. The Mishnah. Before learning the Mishnah, let us glance at the outside margin under our Nosei heading. Oif v'cholov, bird meat, we could say chicken as an example, and milk. We will see a point concerning ha'alo ala shulchan, having it on the table at the same time, namely having chicken and milk on the table at the same time, and achilosan biachad, the issue of eating them together. The Mishnah. Hama'ale es ha'oif im ha'gvino al ha'shulchan eino over b'loy saser. One who puts on the table at the same time cheese and bird meat or chicken, he is not in violation of a negative command. The Gemara asks, ha'oichloi over b'loy saser. Should we conclude, however, if one eats it, namely bird meat and cheese together, he will be in violation of a negative command. Now, if we conclude that, Shema Mino, should we therefore come to the conclusion that Basar of Becholov Doraisa? In other words, it's true that having them on the table at the same time is not a problem, but the inference would be eating them together would be a violation of Bosar B'cholov from the Torah standpoint. And now if we do come to that conclusion, we'll in fact have a Mishnah that is not in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says, no, we're not going to come to that conclusion, but rather say the Mishnah thusly. Amal, this is now a restatement of the Mishnah, hence we have it in a frame as we treat Tanaic sources. This would be a restatement of our Mishnah. Hamal es oif im hagvino ala shulchan, one who allows cheese and
chicken to be on the table at the same time, eino bo lidei lo sasa. He won't ever come, even if he were to eat them together, he won't come to being in violation of a Torah-level prohibition. So, according to this restatement, the Mishnah could be in conformity to Rebbe Akiva's approach. The Mishnah. Before learning the Mishnah, let us glance at the topic heading that we have under the new Nosei, Isser Boser B'cholov, the prohibition of meat and milk, B'vehema Shera, with regard to meat from a kosher animal, B'vehema Tamea, meat from an unkosher variety animal, B'chaya V'of, with regard to undomesticated animals and birds. Is there, or how broad a prohibition is the iser, is the prohibition of meat and milk? The Mishnah. Basar behemot tahora, becholov behemot tahora, osir levashiv osir bahano. Having a cooking kosher variety meat with kosher variety milk, in other words, milk coming from kosher type animals, if one cooks them together, he will be in violation of the act of cooking, and also the product will be prohibited to benefit from. A second scenario, basar behemo tahora, becholov behemo tamea, or basar behemo tamea, becholov behemo tahora. Cases 2 and 3 involve where one of the two elements is of an from an unkosher type source. Then we say muter levashel muter bano. There would be no problem if one were to do the act of cooking them up, and if one cooks them up, he could actually sell it and benefit from it. Of course, eating would be prohibited, but it doesn't come under the prohibition of what's known as boser b'cholov. And the reasoning behind that is that once one of the elements is already prohibited as being from a behema tamea, whether it's the meat or the milk, there's a concept known as ein iser chal al iser, being that there's already a prohibition on it, a new prohibition cannot be superimposed on that. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Chaya V'oif Einom Min HaTorah. Rabbi Kiva says that undomesticated kosher variety animals and kosher variety birds, when cooked with milk, do not constitute a Torah violation of meat and milk. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Lo Savashu Gidi B'chalevimo Gimel Pomim. It says that three times. And the seeming three times throughout the Torah, and the seeming repetition of this serves to teach me prat lechaya uleoif ubehemo tameo. The repetition serves to exclude these animals from being under the category of meat milk prohibition, and they are the chaya, oif, and unkosher variety animals. Rabbi Yosef Lili Omer Nemar loy soichlu kol nevela. V'nemar loy sevashel gidi b'chalev imo. Now, these two prohibitions are found in the Torah in Pasuk, in Perek Yudalit of Sefer Dvarim, Pasuk Chof Aleph. And we've included this Pasuk on the side of your Gemara. So in this Pasuk you have the opening of it talks about the prohibition of eating nevela and the prohibition of cooking Gidi b'chalev imo. So, from this, Rabbi Yossi concludes: Es she'osur mishum nevela, that which becomes prohibited as a result of it dying, osur levashel b'cholov. It is that kind of meat that is prohibited to cook in milk. Now, oif she'osur mishum nevela. What about bird meat? Bird meat conveys tumas nevela as a result of, let's say, the bird, the chicken, not having been slaughtered properly. If it died, one eats it, he's in effect eating what's called the nevelas of tahor. It's nevela. Yochli hay osur levashu b'cholov. is that meat prohibited to be cooked with milk? Talmud Lomar, b'chalev imo. When we talk about that meat, we're referring to, in general, bird meat. Bird meat potentially can be also mishum nevela. So is bird meat, let's say it's shechted, it's slaughtered, even if it's slaughtered, does it come under the prohibition of boser b'chalev? So the Pasuk says, b'chalev imo, that's Talmud Lomar b'chalev imo. Yotzaof, this excludes birds. She'ein lo chalavim, birds, as you know, are not mammals. They are not. They don't nurse their young. So you don't have, in the case of the bird kingdom, you don't have the mothers providing milk to their offspring. So the Isser of Lo Sivasho Gdi B'chalev Imo will not include birds. Mino Hani Mili. From where do we learn that the prohibition of Boser B'chalev extends beyond Gidi? Gidi is a goat. The Pasuk itself says, thou shalt not cook the goat, the young goat, in the milk of its mother. How do we know that the prohibition extends to cover all kosher variety animals? So this question, in effect, serves as the title of our sugya, and we have on the side under our no say heading, we have written minayin de osir de iser boser b'chalav kolel yoser migdi. From where do we know that the prohibition of meat and milk includes more than just a goat, which is the word featured in the pasuk? So the Gemara answers, Omar Rabbi Elazar, Omar Kra. Rabbi Elazar cites the pasuk, which says, Vayishlach Yehuda es gidi ha'izin. In Sefer Bereishis, the pasuk mentions that Yehuda sent a gift of Gidi Ha'izim. Now, we infer from this, as the Gemara continues on the top of Omid Beis, Kan Gidi Izim. In this pasuk, the word Gidi is coupled with Izim, so I understand that Gidi is a reference to goats. However, in other places where the Torah doesn't trouble itself and to limit it to izim, if you see the word gedi alone, then afilu pora v'rachel v'mashma, we could include cows and sheep as well. The Gemara asks, v'leilif minei, why not use the pasuk by Yehuda, which says gedi hoizim, as being a precedent setter that gedi, even when it's not coupled with the word izim, means just that, means goat? So the Gemara answers, ksiv krachrina. Well, there's another pasuk that says, v'es oros gidiyei ho'izim. Kan gidi ho'izim. In this pasuk, in Bereishis Perek Chav Zayin, we say, gidi means goat, because it's coupled with the word izim. Ha kol mokum shenemar gidi stam. However, in all other places where the word gidi appears without the word izim, where it appears on its own, afilu parah v'rochel v'mashma. So from this other pasuk, we see then that gidi stam would be not limiting, and hence include cows and sheep as well. So the Gemara asks, well, v'leilif minei, well, why not learn from that pasuk in Bereishis Chav Zayin, that even though the word gidi may appear stam, it's means ho'izim, as it says there in the pasuk in Bereishis Chav Zayin, ves oros gedoye ho'izim. So the Gemara says, havu luhu shnei ksuvim haboim ke'echad. What we now have is a situation of two psukim, the pasuk in Bereishis Lamed Ches and the pasuk in Bereishis Chav Zayin, two psukim that teach me the same thing. And there is a rule, v'chol shnei ksuvim haboim ke'echad ein malamdin. When you have two psukim saying the same thing, namely you have two instances where gedi is coupled with izim, I then conclude that it is only in these two places that gedi, it means ho'izim, goats. However, in all other places, it does not mean just goats. Honi ho lamando ein malamdin. The approach we just took conforms with one school of thought, namely the school that says shnei ksuvim boim keachod ein malamdin, that they do not, when you have two psukim stating the same thing, they cannot serve as a precedent to other areas. Elo lamando mer malamdin mayikol amemar, but according to the other school of thought that says that even though the two psukim teach me the same thing, they can serve as a precedent for other areas. So even though we have two psukim here that have the term gedi coupled with izim, in general, I might say that gedi, even if with it, without it being coupled with the word izim, means goat and only goat. And we'd be back to square one. How will I know that the word gedi in the boso becholov psukim goes beyond just goats? So the Gemara answers, trei miuti ksivi. Izim ha-izim. In the two psukim that were cited, namely Breishis Lamed Ches Posuk Chof, we should say Posuk Chof, and this Posuk from Breishis Chof Zayin, the word ha-izim appears with a hey in it. Hey is a limiting expression. So trei miuti ksivi indicates that only here will gedi mean goats, but elsewhere I'm not limited. Omar Shmuel. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's just glance at the outside margin for our topic heading. We have a new topic heading, and we have written there, Droshos mehodichsiv gedi and bachalev imo. Bearing in mind that the Torah repeats the pasuk of Lo Sivashu Gedi Bachalev Imo three times in the Torah. By virtue of the repetition, this gives us the opportunity to see multiple drushos from these expressions. So the first exposition will be regarding the word Gedi, and then another couple lines we'll see the issue of Chalev Imo dealt with. Omar Shmuel, Gedi Larabos Es Hachilev. This would teach me that if one were to take chilev of an animal, chilev sometimes is translated as forbidden fats. For our purposes, it's different parts of a kosher variety animal that are forbidden, carry with it a very heavy penalty, the kores penalty, if one eats it. What would happen if one takes the chilev parts of the animal and cooks it in milk? So Shmuel says that the presence of the word gedi, we find the term gedi appearing extra. This will include the prohibition of cooking up chilev in milk. Gedi larabos es hamesa. This would include the cooking of a kosher variety animal that dropped dead, namely nevela meat. Let us not confuse nevela with unkosher variety animals like horse, camels, pigs. This is something else. This is a kosher variety animal that dropped dead or was slaughtered improperly. That's a nevela. So we're saying that cooking up nevela meat in milk would also fall under the prohibition of basar becholov. Gedi l'rabos es hashlil. One who were to cook up, let us say, some fetal meat, an unborn animal, in milk. Gedi, this is now a fourth drusha, which is a little bit surprising, because the term gedi appears three times in the Torah. Here we're going on to a fourth drusha. You'll notice that the next couple numbers in our numbering system are in parentheses, 4, 5, and 6. There is a reason for that, which will be touched on as we go on in the Gemara. But a fourth drusha, gedi, lahotzi es hadam. There would be no prohibition. Lohotzi means to the exclusion of blood. In other words, cooking blood up in milk would not be a problem of basar becholov. Number 6, gedi lahotzi es hashilya, cooking up the placenta of a birth in milk would not be included in the prohibition of the prohibition of cooking up meat in milk. And 6, gedi lahotzi es hatmea. The word gedi will exclude an unkosher variety animal from the prohibition of basar becholov. Notice, on a technical level, 1, 2, and 3 are drushas that come to include that which is beyond the word gedi, and drushas 4, 5, and 6 are exclusionary. And we've tried to feature this with our markings with a diagonal dashed underline. You'll notice the direction of the diagonal dashing under the words larabos are different from the diagonal dashings under lahotzi. They take different directions to show you the different roles. Continuing in the droshas, b'chalev imo, that expression is v'lo b'cholov zohar. There could be, through maybe hormonal changes or other factors, actually the Gemara in Shabbos tells us of a case of an impoverished male who was incapable of hiring a wet nurse. His own breast developed as a milk-producing organ. Well, if a male produces milk, of course, as we said, would be under extraordinary circumstances. Nevertheless, that milk is not considered the milk of the Torah that would lead to a prohibition of Bosar B'cholov. Number two, B'chalev Imo, V'lo B'cholov Shchuta. We've touched on this sugya in the past when we were dealing with the udders. What this drosh is telling us is that the milk that is considered prohibited by the Torah is milk that comes from an animal that could be a mother, not a slaughtered animal, even though its udders may be full of milk. But milk that's extracted from udders from a slaughtered animal is not considered it's not legally considered milk as far as this halacha of Bosar B'cholov is concerned. And three, a third exclusion as a result of this pasuk is b'chalev imo v'lo b'cholov tameah. In other words, all kinds of mammals produce milk. However, their milk, if it's an unkosher variety animal, camels, horses, pigs, that type of milk is already prohibited as something that's called yoytzim in osur. It comes from that which is prohibited. So we don't assign to it an additional isra, an additional prohibition, the prohibition of bosar b'cholov, of meat milk. The Gemara now asks, regarding the multiple drushes on the word gedi, we said that there were six drushes as we see numbered, but ha tlosa gedi ksivi v'anan shisa darshinan. The Torah makes reference to three gedi, meaning three psukim that say lo sevasha gedi b'chalev imo, from three words that appear in there. How can you come up with six drushes, six legal derivations? According to Rashi, the next line is not the accepted part of the girsa. So we're going to skip the next phrase. We have this dashed parentheses in the text to indicate this skipping. And we also have a note in the Rashi where you can find his point regarding this matter. So the Gemara continues after the parentheses that we supplied. Chelev umesa. Cases 1 and 2, in other words, the prohibition of cooking up chelev in milk and the prohibition of cooking up nevela in milk, mechad kro nafki. These two can be derived from one pasuk, one use of the word gedi. In other words, I am thereby combining 1 and 2 into one drasha. Another point, dam nami lav gedi hu. Blood is not considered the animal, so that it's not a gedi in the first place. Vashilya nami pirsha bi'alma hu. Pirsha is simple waste. Vashilya is the placenta. It's that tissue matter that it develops around in which the embryo develops, and it's considered something that is separated from the animal, just like waste material is separated from the animal, and hence it's not meat. So 4 and 5 as well, which we thought were learned from Gedi, you don't need the word Gedi to exclude that which is, we'll say, obvious. Dam is not gedi, and shilya is simple waste. That frees up then two more gedi words, so to speak. So out of the total of three gedis, we've mentioned that drushes 1 and 2 are going to be used up by one appearance of the word gedi. And drushes 4 and 5 don't figure in our calculations as well, at all. Poshu lehu trei. So now I'm left with two gedi words from which to darshan things. So chad lerabos is a shliel. One of them will be used for including the embryo as part of a prohibition in Boser B'cholov. And that we saw above as number 3. And v'chad lim'ute behema tmeya. And the other available gedi drasha will come to exclude from the prohibition unkosher variety meat being cooked in milk. And that we saw as number 6 above in the drushas. So with that, we basically are telling you that the three words, just to review, are accounted by the following drushas. Chelev and Mesa are under the prohibition of Boser B'cholov. That's learned from one gedi. The second gedi is to include embryos as being part of the prohibition of meat and milk. And the third gedi is present to exclude unkosher variety animals from the prohibition of meat and milk. At this point, the Gemara continues with Shmuel as the focus of our attention, but it introduces a new question. On the outside margin, under our No Say heading, we have included the following introduction. Birur Shitas Shmuel, we want to analyze or clarify Shmuel's opinion, Be'inyan Isser Chal Al Isser, with regard to the topic of subsequent prohibitions being superimposed on pre-existing items that were prohibited, or superimposed on pre-existing prohibitions. So Mitzad Echod Omar, from one angle, Shmuel has said, the Isser Boser B'cholov Chal Al Nevelo V'chelev. We just saw that, where if one cooks up meat, nevela meat. Nevela meat is something that's already prohibited. Nevela is something, is meat that is from an animal that dropped dead. A cow, a sheep, a goat that happened to drop dead or were slaughtered improperly are called nevela. Even without milk in the picture, that is something that is already prohibited to eat. Chelev, as we mentioned earlier, is different sections of the animal have this substance inside. It's usually attached to different organs. And the chelev, it's specific tissue matter attached to specific organs that is prohibited. If one were to cook it up in milk, according to Shmuel, the additional prohibition of Boser B'cholov will apply to the chelev, which is something that was already oser, already prohibited. So from there, we see that Shmuel holds from Isser Chal Al Isser. Avol Mitzad Sheni, Sover Shmuel, we continue reading our note, from another angle, from another side of things, it seems that Shmuel says, the Kohen Tomei, She'ochal Truma Tomeo, Eino B'miso, the Isser Tumas Haguf, Lochola Al Isser Al Truma Tomeo, a Kohen who was Tomei, who was ritually impure, that happened to eat Truma Tomeo, Truma that was already itself had already come into contact with something that renders it tomei. That if a Kohen, we should maybe give a little more background to this particular point, and that is that a Kohen who's tomei, who eats truma tahora, is chayav miso bidei shemayim. He's chayav death at the hands of heaven. It's considered a very severe penalty for a Kohen who is in a state of tumas haguf to eat truma tahora. What we will be focusing on in this discussion is a Kohen who is Tomei, who happens to eat Truma Tomei. Ironically, in a sense, that the Truma in this case is Tomei already. If a Kohen who's Tomei who eats this, he is not going to be guilty of Misa Bidei Shamayim. In simply stated, for a Kohen Tomei to eat Truma Tahora, it would be worse for him than a Kohen whose Tomei who eats Truma Tomei. And this is a function of Ein Isser Chalal Isser, the Isser of Tumas Haguf, of the Kohen, the body Tuma, the personal Tuma that he experiences, cannot be superimposed on Truma that's already Tomei and hence already forbidden to eat. Maybe to complete the picture, we might as well add that a Kohen who is Tohor, that eats Truma Tomei, is in violation of what's called an asay. It's a violation of a positive command without getting into details, but it does not carry with it the penalty of misa bidei shamayim. So what have we illustrated in our introduction? That on the one hand, Shmuel seems to say Isser Chalal Isser, from the examples of Chelev and Nevela cooked in milk. And on the other hand, when it comes with regard to the realm of Truma Tamea eaten by a Kohen who's Tomei, he seems to say Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. Now, the Gemara. The Sovar Shmuel Isser Chal Al Isser? Are we to conclude that Shmuel holds that a second Isser can be superimposed on a pre-existing Isser, as we saw in the cases of Boser B'cholov with regard to Chelev and Mesa the Nevela? Ah, but Vomar Shmuel, Mishum Rebbe Eliezer, but we have heard Shmuel say in the name of Rebbe Eliezer, Minayin l'koyin tomei shochal truma tomeo she'eino b'misa. From where do we know that a Kohen who is tomei, namely Tumas Haguf, who happened to eat truma, that is tomeo, that he is not subjected to the penalty of misa bidei shamayim? In other words, we don't say that the Isser of Tumas Haguf can be superimposed on the prohibition of eating truma tomeo. Ein Isser chal al Isser. Shinemar, the source for the Truma Halacha is Umesu Bo Ki Ichaluluhu. Now that posuk is in the context of a Kohen who is experiencing Tumas Haguf. And it says a Kohen who eats Truma in a state of Tumas Haguf warrants death at the hands of heaven. And from this posuk we learn Prat Lezu Shemichuleles Velmedes. However, we will exclude from this penalty of Misa Bidei Shemayim one who eats truma, he who himself is already tummy, who eats truma that's already defiled, which in effect excludes the case of the Kohen tummy eating truma tamea. And as we said, from this it would appear that ein iser chal al iser. Well, in order to answer this or to rectify or streamline Shitas Shmuel, we have several approaches. You can see they're introduced in our pre-marked Gemaras with triangles. And we've explained thusly on the side under our Mivneh heading. We feature a triangle and we also have written Durochim Liyashev Shitas Shmuel. These are different approaches to straighten out, to create a sense of consistency within the opinion of Shmuel. So the first approach, Iboy Seimo Be'almo Yisr Chal Al Yisr. That in general, prohibitions can be superimposed on pre-existing prohibitions. V'shayni hosam demiet kro rachmono umesu bo. And the case of truma is different. There is an explicit limitation. It said umesu bo, that only in one case, bo in it. It meaning it as opposed to other cases. That only in one case will there be this exclusion, meaning this non-Isser Chalal Isser situation. Iboy Seima, a second approach, Ba'almo Kosovar Shmuel, that in general Shmuel holds, Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. And the case of the Truma would be illustrative, would be the standard as far as Shmuel is concerned, where we say a second prohibition is not superimposed on a pre-existing prohibition. V'shayni hocha, however, the case here, meaning the case of Boser B'cholov involving the Chelev or the Nevela cooked in milk, is different. The Ravi Rachmona Gedi. Here there's a specific scriptural reference made to include the Boser B'cholov or superimpose Boser B'cholov on pre-existing prohibitions. So, as far as answer one is concerned, and answer two, there is a consistent, there's a standard approach that Shmuel would take, and whichever approach you take, that which is what's called, let's say, exceptional, that's a result of a scriptural reference. The Iboy Seima, a third approach, Ha Didei, Ha Derabei. One reflects Shmuel himself. That's the case of Isser Chal Al Isser. That Shmuel himself will hold that Isser, second Isser, can be superimposed on a pre-existing Isser. However, Ha Derabei, where Shmuel seemed to say otherwise, that's because he was quoting his rabbi, he was quoting his master, so to speak. He was saying something in the name of someone else. In this case, he was saying it in the name of Rabbi Eliezer. And so according to Rabbi Eliezer, Ein Isser Chalal Isser. So you have Shmuel's own opinion and the opinion of another authority. So there is no question then. You just simply have two different authorities being represented. And as far as Rabbi Eliezer is concerned, as we saw above, we have a little arrows, by the way, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text where you can see the if you align the arrows up, you see above where Rabbi Eliezer was being quoted by Shmuel. So you have, once again, this last approach simply says that according to Shmuel himself, Isser Chalal Isser. And that we saw illustrated in the case of the Chalev and the Neveva cooked in milk. However, as far as the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer is concerned, Ein Isser Chalal Isser. Bo Mine Rav Achtavuye Bar Ami Me Rav. So Rav Achtavuye asks a question of Rav HaMavashel B'chalav Gedi Shelohinika Mahu. Imagine you have an animal that was pregnant, was about to give birth, but prior to its giving birth, it was slaughtered. So we have milk that comes from an animal that has not as yet nursed. If we take a look, we take a look in the Rashi to the lower part of the page, Shelohinika. Lo yolda me'olam, an animal that hasn't given birth at all, ever. V'yeshla cholav kshikrova limei leidasa. But milk is being produced in her udders prior to the actual birth. Mi daikinan, should we infer imo, the word imo of the Torah, when it says lo savash gediba chalev imo, shehoisa imo kvar, oy loy. Are we talking about an animal that already bore a child or not? So just to go over the case with a little more accuracy, let us say we have extracted milk from an animal that was about to give birth. So we have a situation where you have milk, but it's coming from an animal that never actually was an aim. It never was actually a mother. In other words, I milked an animal that was about to give birth, but never had not given birth up to that point. So, and then I take that milk and I use it for cooking other meat in it. In other words, we don't have to explain, like we mentioned before, that we then slaughtered this particular animal. That really is an irrelevancy. But I did take milk. I milked an animal that had milk in it, but has not ever given birth. So it's not, it's an animal that is not an aim. It's a non-mother animal. So what is the din regarding that kind of milk? Omar Lei. So Rav answers Rav Achtavuye's question, and he says, Midisricha l'shmuel l'meimar, from the fact that Shmuel had to say b'chalev imo v'lo b'cholav zachar, there was something excluded. That was male-produced milk. So male-produced milk is not cholov as far as this prohibition is concerned of basar b'cholov. Zohar hu dolo osi l'chlal aim. A male never comes to being a mother. Aval hai, but the case of the goat that has as of yet not born a child, it hasn't given birth yet. Kevon de bo l'chlal aim osir, since it will come to being a mother, even before it's a mother, since it's the potential of being a mother is latent within this animal, therefore it does have the status of milk. Itmar, hamavashel chelev b'cholov. One who cooks up chelev in milk. We mentioned chelev before. Here we will see a controversy. Rabbi Ami v'Ravasi, chad omar loike v'chad omar eino loike. One says that for cooking up chelev in milk, there is malchus, there is a lashing penalty, and one opinion says there is no lashing penalty. Lema b'ha kamiflegi. The Gemara raises as a suggestion, maybe, or should we say that the machlokas concerns the following. Now, what we've done with our markings, we've double underlined the expression b'ha kamiflegi, and a few lines later, ki pligi. This is to accentuate the Gemara's suggestions as to what the machlokas may be. So, at this point, we have a question. Should we say that the machlokas is the madur maloike kosavar, isur chal al isur, the one who says that there will be lashing, holds that a subsequent isur, in this case milk and meat, can be superimposed on the pre-existing isur, which had been either chelev or cha'or, which had been chelev. Chelev was a pre-existing prohibition. So once something is already prohibited, so one of the two opinions will tell you that, in other words, the one who says that there's no malchus holds kosavar ein isur chalal isur. So just to go over this point, the opinion that says, we don't know who holds what, but you've got Rav Ami and Rav Asi, the one who says that there will be malchus for cooking up chelev and chalav, holds that isur chal al isur. The one who holds there's no malchus will be holding ein isur chal al isur loy. The Gemara rejects this approach and says, rather, de kulei alma ein isur chal al isur. Everyone, Rabbi Ami and Rav Asi, both hold that in general a second isur cannot be superimposed on something that's already prohibited. And as a result of this, and everyone agreeing that ein isur chal isur, achilu de kulei alma lo pligi de lo loki, for the eating of chelev cooked in milk, everyone will agree that there is no isur. The reason for that is that there was a pre-existing prohibition of eating chelev. So from the fact that the chelev is now cooked in milk, will not be superimposed. The isur of Basar B'chov will not be superimposed on the eating of this chelev. That's a function of everyone holding ein isur chalal isur. There was already an achila isur, an isur achila on this chelev. There cannot be superimposed a new isur achila, the prohibition of eating meat and milk. Ki pligi abishol. The machlokis concerns lashings for the cooking of the chelev in the milk. In general, there is a, even if one doesn't eat basar b'cholov, but one cooks up basar b'cholov, that itself is an act that's prohibited. What happens if one cooks up chelev in milk? For the act of cooking, will there be malchus? So, mandor marloike, chad isurahu. The one who says that there will be malchus is because we're not talking about the superimposing of a second isur on a pre-existing isur, namely. As far as chelev by itself is concerned, there is no prohibition of cooking up, of any cooking prohibition associated with chelev. If I choose to cook the chelev in milk, this will be the first time a cooking prohibition becomes associated with chelev. So it's not an isur chal al isur, it's chad isuruhu. Rashi explains, in the Dibur HaMasul, you see toward the bottom of the page, Ki pligi abishol, Sheharei chelev v'chol shar isurim lo nesru levashel, Ela bosar b'cholov. Chelev is being treated here as something other than meat. So chelev and other prohibited things were never prohibited in being cooked. There's no cooking prohibition with things other than actual meat. Hilchoch gavi bishol ein kan elo iser boser b'cholov. As far as the cooking of chelev is concerned, there is only one iser that we can speak about, and that's the iser of having it cooked in milk. However, just to review the point, as far as the an eating prohibition is concerned, to say that chelev will now be usur, in addition to it being prohibited in eating as chelev, that there will be an additional eating prohibition of eating milk and meat, that we will not say. So as far as eating is concerned, everyone agrees, there is not going to be the eating prohibition of basar b'cholov when it comes to chelev cooked in milk. However, for the act of cooking up chelev and milk, this is the point of difference. And reading this again in the Gemara, second line from the bottom at the end, Ma domar loike, chad isurahu. The one who says that there's malchus, when as far as the bishul aspect is concerned, it's only one isur that is present. Ma domar eino loike, the opinion that says that there is no malchus, lahochi afka rachmona lachila beloshon bishul. The Torah in referring to the prohibition of eating through using the word bishul, after all, the pasuk says lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imo, and one of the psukim is its intent is to warn against the eating of it, and it calls eating by the term bishul. From the fact that this rather strange phenomenon takes place, the conclusion is Kevon de al achilo loloki. We're reading the top line of Kuf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph. Since for the eating there is no malchus for the eating of chelev cooked in milk, based on ein iser halal iser, abishol nami loloki. With regard to the cooking of the chelev in milk, there will also be no malchus. The ika the amri. Now what we have is a second approach to explaining this machlokis between Rav Ami and Rav Asi. As you can see, we've squiggle underlined the expression Iko de Amri, and we do this whenever we have several lashonos presented of whatever. Here is a second lashon to explain the machlokis, and we've called this also like when we presented the first one, three lines from the bottom of Omid Beis, Kufi Gimel Beis, Roman numeral number 1. Here, we call this Roman numeral number 2. A second approach. And it's as follows. Abishul kuli alma lo pligi deloki. As far as Malchus, lashings for the cooking of the chelev and the milk, everyone will agree that there is Malchus. Ki pligi achila. The controversy between them is on the issue of eating the chelev cooked in milk. Man du omar eino loke, the one who says that there will be no malchus, that's because toha ein iser chal al iser. A second iser cannot be superimposed on a pre-existing iser. The pre-existing iser in this case was the prohibition of eating chelev. A new prohibition, the prohibited eating of meat and milk, when it comes to the chelev, would be a second eating prohibition, and that cannot be attached. Umadom or loike, the opinion that says that there will be malchus, will hold lahochi afka rachmono lachila beloshen bishul. It's for this reason that the Torah chose the unusual word for eating, the term bishul or lo sevashel. And from this choice of the word to refer to eating, the word bishul is used to refer to eating, we understand kevon de abishul loki, since for the cooking there is malchus, achila nami loki, for the eating of it there will also be malchus. The Ivoyas Emo, a third approach, and we've indicated this with a Roman numeral number 3 to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. A third approach says as follows, Mor Omar Chado, Umor Omar Chado, Velo Pligi. Remember, we had Rav Ami and Rav Asi, and the Gemara had said, very, very simply, one says malchus and the other says no malchus. Is there necessarily a machlokus? So this third approach says that there is no machlokus at all. One says one thing and the other says another. Here we look at Rashi, who spells it out at the very top. Umar Omar Chado, Mador Omar Loke, the one who says that there will be malchus, Koy Abishol. He is referring to the issue of the cooking, the act of cooking, or the prohibited act of cooking, the chelev in milk. The chado isurahu. There's only one prohibition that is involved over there. Namely, when it comes to the chilev, before milk entered the picture, there was no cooking prohibition associated with chilev. So, since it's one iser, you can say that there will be malchus for it. It's not a problem of iser chalal iser. Rashi goes on, Umadomar ein loke, the other opinion, the one that says there's no lashing, he's not referring to cooking, he's referring to the eating. Koi achila, that's a reference to the eating. The im lo hisrubo mishum achilas chelev, elo mishum bosor b'cholav. If, let us say, you had a person who cooked up chelev in milk, and he was warned concerning, let's say he was not warned concerning the prohibition of eating chelev. All he was told was that you better be careful, don't eat that because it's boser b'cholav. You know what the outcome will be? Eino loke. He will not get lashed. Even though we know that before giving lashings, there must be a warning. In this case, the warning will not be sufficient to impart lashings. And the reason for that is, the prohibition of eating this as bosar b'cholav cannot be superimposed on the pre-existing prohibition of eating chelev. As a result of that, the warning that he gets is simply, it will be a meaningless warning, and hence he will not get lashes. But once again, that surrounds the issue of the eating. The opinion that said there's lashing, that is because he was talking about lashings for the act of cooking. Basically a separate matter. Hence, according to this third approach, there is no machlokas between Rav Ami and Rav Asi. The Gemara goes on with a question. Meisvei. We have a Tanaic source. Hamavashil, the Mei Cholov Potter. This source has quite a few details in it. The emphasis, as far as today's shir is concerned, will be from the end of the source. As you can see, there's a section of this that's dashed, underlined. The source, nevertheless, says that one who cooks up the Mei Cholov Potter. Mei Cholov is a watery substance that separates from milk as you let the milk stand for a while. Water separates from it, so that's called Mei Cholov. If one cooks meat in that substance, he is exempt. Dam shebishul b'cholav poter. Likewise, blood cooked up in milk is exempted from bosar b'cholav. Ha'atzamos v'agidim ha'karnayim v'talafayim shebishul b'cholav poter. Bones, sinews, horns, hooves that are cooked up in milk, even though it comes from an animal, nevertheless it's not considered meat, and hence it doesn't result in any guilt of bosar b'cholav. Hapigol v'anoyser v'hatomei shebishlon b'cholav chayav. If one took these elements, now these are from sacrifices. Pigol is a sacrifice that was slaughtered with an incorrect mindset. There are other details, but we're just going to speak about this in general terms. Nosar is leftover sacrificial meat. Tomei is meat that became ritually impure. Shebishlon b'cholav, that were cooked up in milk. Chayov, it carries with it guilt. So that there is an iser of bosar b'cholav on these examples. These are examples of things that were already prohibited. And it says that there is an additional iser of bosar b'cholav that settles upon this. Let us glance in the Rashi at the fourth line from the top. Hapigul v'anoser, almo. Afagav d'asiri v'kaimi. Even though these are prohibited things, pigol, nosur, tomei are already prohibited. Osi iser bosar b'cholav v'chalalayu. The prohibition of bosar b'cholav does attach to these things, to these examples. V'hu adinami im bishel chelev b'cholav. Likewise, if he were to cook up chelev in milk, there would be an iser, a prohibition. Amo me ribui digidi nafka lon dechayol al kol isurin. So from the presence of the word gidi, we see that bosar b'cholav attaches itself to all kinds of prohibitions. So what we see from here is that iser chal al iser. if we take advantage of our arrow that we see in the margin, in this space, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, we see this arrow indicates to look back at Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. Three lines from the bottom, you'll notice an arrow, and this points to a line in the Gemara on which it said, the Kuli Alma Ein Isser Chal Al Isser, that everyone will be in agreement that a second Isser cannot be superimposed on something that was already Usser. And as part of that discussion, the Gemara said, well, as far as eating is concerned, everyone agrees there will be no machlokas, because chalev in that case was already prohibited, so the eating of it cooked in milk cannot be superimposed on the pre-existing Isser of chalev. The Gemara went on to mention that there may be a controversy concerning bishul. But what we are focusing on in this question is the statement that everyone is in agreement that ain isser halal isser. There may be a special exception made concerning bishul because of the term in the Torah that's chosen here. However, from this Tanaic source, and this is the reason the Gemara is bringing it in, we are shown that Isser Chal Al Isser. Hence, this is a kasha on that which the Gemara said at the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara answers very simply, Hai Tana Savar Isser Chal Al Isser. This Tanaic source, which appeared in the frame, happens to hold that second Isurim can be attached to those things that were already classified as prohibited. However, the Amoroyim here that the Gemara says everyone holds Ein Isser Chal Isser, they, as Rashi says, can rely on other opinions, other Tanaic sources that will disagree with this source. Hence, the Gemara's answer is saying, Gemara is basically saying, this Tana holds Isser Chal Isser, but there are other Tanoim that say Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. And it's based on that that our Gemara said at the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis that everyone holds, namely Rabami and Ravasi, will hold like those Tanaic authorities that say Ein Isser Chal Al Isser. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.